This is To Wear, or Break, or Keep. Written by Active Virtues, and read by Tipsy Kitty. It's not funny, of course, except that it is, because he knows he should never have entertained ideas above his station. He can hear his mother's voice and the deep, tired disappointment of it all, see her in front of him, even, explaining to him again how the world works for their kind of people. Edward Teach is not a creature of fine silks and plush featherbeds. He was not made to hold soft hands in his, to press kisses against rose-scented golden hair, to dream of a quiet life of ease with his beloved on a calm beach somewhere far across the sea. He can't help but laugh at his own sick folly as he looks into Steed's little mirror, still on the dressing table and liable to slide off and shatter at the next big wave. He has smeared his face in black, and it still feels like not enough. He wishes he could tear his skin off and burn it, wear a beard of black smoke instead of what he has, stubble and grease and ash and emptiness filled up to the brim with rage. There is nothing left to rend in this room, so he snatches the pair of fine sharp scissors from Steed's desk and stalks down the hall until he finds another piece of his life he can break. His real hands should do nicely. It's not enough, of course. There's not enough left on the ship that will break satisfyingly under his hands, that will gush warm blood onto his skin and remind him that it doesn't matter, that nothing has to matter when he can do this. Izzy looks at him constantly now, with the same dazed expression a man might have after beholding an eclipse of the sun for the first time. A great shadow has swallowed Edward up, and nothing and everything is as it should be. His harsh bark of a voice repeats the Kraken's orders note perfect, and the crew dance below the bridge to comply as if the hounds of hell are nipping at their heels. In turn, the Kraken observes the wonderment on his face, the fear and satisfaction that twist together like lianas working together to strangle a great tree as the Kraken stalks the decks, looking to the horizon for another ship to plunder. Edward is behaving as if the Kraken has fully possessed him, slid its great tentacles through his body and imbued him with some power to read the minds of his men, because Izzy has suddenly begun openly wearing joy on his face as the Kraken rampages through the greater Antilles, leaving wreckage of every kind in his wake. He comes to Edward at night once. "I can help you," he says gruffly, and offers himself up. Ed can only see the soft belly of a vicious dog splayed out and helpless for the Kraken to pet, if he wants. The scissors are in his hand before he can think, and the Kraken decides to carve great undulating shapes in Izzy's sea-rough skin to see what emerges. He is striding across the room with intent, and he cannot stop. He cannot let himself think. "Or I could just," Izzy says, breath hitching, and he is out of the room before the rest of his words are out of his mouth. Instead, Edward Teach carves a great gouge in the cheek of the desk, so deep that the point of the scissors catch on something metal in its insides. Then he is sliding to the floor, great hot tears soaking his cheeks, washing away the black, and the only thing he can find in himself are sobs that shake everything else loose. The anger comes first, his reliable companion, and every single bit of it he has kept in reserve seems to crash down from the great piles he has hoarded inside his mind, secure in the knowledge that it will keep him afloat when nothing else works. His hands scrabble at the floor, trying to tear up the boards, but the sleek wood fails to provide even splinters. Steed Bonnet has taken even this from him, not caring in the least how Edward needs the splinters, needs to focus on the ecstasy of mindless destruction, because when the anger is spent, it is the pain's turn to collapse around him. And oh, it hurts. The Kraken's great arms peeling away from his insides in one great yank, pulling loose the suction and breaking his armor open to reveal all of his soft parts. It hurts like waiting on a dock at sunrise, like offering up the small secret parts of yourself for the first time even though you should have known better, like a first kiss that is also a last kiss. It does not hurt like stabbing. Swords are too sharp. Love is a blunt object, unsuited for carving yet insisting upon the act despite itself. The pain racks him, and he shakes with it, the sobs coming so hard now that his body can't do anything to contain them. He does not remember what it was like to be silent. He does not remember a time when he was whole. Except he does. The great waves of pain crashing over him shake loose all the memories, all at once. Everything he has stored away to wrap him up warm and safe when he cannot bear to be himself in this world for another breath. His mother, her gentle hands the softest things he thought he would ever feel. A caress on his smudged cheek as he presents her with the hat full of sun-ripe cherries he plucked from the highest boughs of the tree that shaded the graveyard at Birdcage Walk. Jack, sunburned and grinning, tossing a ripe coconut from the trees edging the sand high into the air before shooting it with his blunderbuss, its sweet water raining down on Ed's still black hair. Izzy, eyes solemn and wary, agreeing to be his first mate in the smoky aftermath of the raid that wins them their ship. Hands in the dark, low laughter in the warm, wet pleasure sparking through his core, reminding him that he is still human, still a creature of joy and satisfaction beneath the power and pain. Steed. If he could just see, if there was any way he could find, or if there was just a moment, maybe, where they could... Once again, he feels the slick, cold grasp of the Kraken, reminding him of this reality, that his rage could never subside. That if the Kraken ever does truly untangle himself from inside him, all the raw places will bleed until his whole world is flooded red. He falls asleep there on the floor, tears dried on his face like sea spray, grasping for the well of anger he has always known will be there to provide sustenance. He's not sure what it is that lulls him in the end, but in his dreams he makes a decision and awakens with a fully formed plan. There are no corpses rotting on the little spit of land where they left Steed's men so many weeks ago. There are no signs that anyone ever stood there. Nothing to remind Blackbeard of the memory he has turned over in his head so many times, watching that little patch of land until it disappeared into the horizon, the sick, satisfying twist in his stomach at what he had done. "Captain," says Fang, there's a mark? Blackbeard strides over to where Fang and Ivan are staring down at the ground, and sure enough someone has laid out a great X in rocks and tree cuttings on the high ground of what barely passes for an island. "Is it treasure?" Ivan asks, eyes lighting up. "Don't be an idiot," he says, but leans down to clear the branches from the center of the mark anyway. The parchment has been wrapped around a stone near the center of the X, tied with a thin ribbon of worn blue silk that he shoves into a pocket like he's stealing at the moment the knot finally yields to his fumbling hands, which is ridiculous but cannot possibly be helped. He can't make out most of the words, but the fine, careful swirls of Steed Bonnet's hand have imprinted into his mind just as surely as every other little bit of fluff he exuded. "Fine gem," Blackbeard says to Fang, who just stares at him like he's grown actual tentacles and doesn't move. He leans forward. "If I have to say it again, there will be bone-breaking involved." "My mistake, Captain," says Fang, and scampers toward the ship like he's remembered how to be spry. Ivan is looking up at the sky, pretending he didn't notice any of the interaction. "No frankenfurters today, boss," he says, and then points at a cloud blob. "Maybe a dolphin or something. Porpoise." Blackbeard doesn't respond. "Porpoise," Ivan says, drawing out the last syllable and popping the sound of the peas like their mastic gum in his mouth. "Porpoise." The entire situation grates at Blackbeard, and for a moment he considers crumpling up the paper, chucking it and Ivan both into the sea. "That one is definitely a whale, though," Ivan adds after a while. Blackbeard strokes a thumb over the curls of Steed's signature at the bottom of the page, and sits down in the dirt to wait for Jim. Steed was here. He is alive and at sea, and he has something to say to Ed. That's enough message to think about until Jim deciphers the rest of it for him. Jim's eyes skim the page for a long minute, and Blackbeard clenches his fists tightly at his side to keep from reaching out, shaking Jim until they say, "Whatever it is the page says, Blackbeard doesn't know. He can be normal about this," he thinks. He can behave like a pirate should, and know that the only thing that matters is the ship and the sea it sails on, the next bounty, and... Well, Pendejo, it seems to me that you're both fucking idiots. Jim says it like an expert diagnosis. I'm sure you realize that already, but I felt like it needed repeating just in case.
Maybe?
Ed replied, startled. What, did he say anything about me? Or where he was? Why he, you know? He takes a deep breath, blows it out as Jim watches him, a serene expression on their face like they know they hold all the floofy handwriting deciphering power. And Ed can't do anything but try not to... Do you think you should just read it all to me, maybe?
Dunno if you want me to do that, Captain Kraken, sir,
says Jim. And the knowing tone in their voice nearly sends Ed into a spiral of something. Some kind of goddamn perfectly normal and rational pirate emotion. Well, with friends around and all.
I don't have friends,
he snaps, and ignores the hurt on Fang and Ivan's faces. They shouldn't feel hurt. They're goddamn pirates.
Leave. Go. Build a sandcastle or something. Find a crab to glue a knife to.
Ooh, says Fang, brightening. I saw one earlier that looked like a fighter. Looked like...
Crabby, Ivan shouts, running down the slope at a surprisingly quick pace for someone whose main job is looming.
My boy!
So, says Jim, watching Ivan and Fang as they poke around in the sand.
You can steed, then.
Just read me the letter before I stab you in the kidney, Blackbeard says, trying for intimidating and definitely for sure achieving it.
Aye, Captain, says Jim. Toot sweet.
He will absolutely stab them in the kidney. Just later, probably.
Yeah, it is. Get on with it.
They read in a voice that immediately begins to sound like Steed, because nobody puts words together quite like he does. And Ed is sure Steed Bonnet has never once been anything more or less than his whole self. There is an apology that makes a muscle in Ed's cheek jump appallingly. That makes him want to snatch the paper out of Jim's hands and tell them he just had a smudge in his eye and doesn't need their help with this at all, actually. But then they take a breath before diving into it in earnest, and a story emerges from the paper. It is a story he had imagined in his head over and over, in a thousand different versions over the infinite hours since he stepped onto that dock in the dark before sunrise. One of those versions was bound to be the right one, he'd thought. But Steed is telling all of those versions wrong. Some nonsense about ruining Blackbeard, taking him away from everything he loved, of selfishness that wasn't Ed's for some strange reason. He tells that story wrong, and then he is telling Ed about his family, his real family. Except Steed keeps saying they aren't. It is the wrong story, Ed is sure, told in all the wrong ways. Steed cannot be referring to anyone except his wife and children when he talks about his real family. That's what family means.
You read that wrong, he tells Jim. Go back and read it right.
He recognizes the pity in their eyes and hates it.
Boss, Jim says, I can only read what's on the page. Read it again then, Blackbeard says. You must have got the words wrong. Maybe his handwriting is too floral, curly. Read it over.
They take a breath, start back over from the beginning of the story. The docks and the escape and Steed breaking the pirate in him, ruining something that Ed knows very well only ever needed ruination. Again they read about family, and again there are those words. Mary recognized that I needed my real family before I did, and even more strangely, the gentleman Steed Bonnet is dead, and only the pirate has survived. There is also, for some reason, something about a leopard and a piano, and that settles it. Clearly, it is all nonsensical lies, and there's nothing for it. Jim is mid-breath when he finally can't take any more of it.
You're reading it wrong, or he's writing one of his stories as if anyone but a damned fool would believe it were real. He's lying like he lied before. Like he lied to you and your man and to me, us.
There is no stumble in his voice, of course, no uncertainty. He is Blackbeard, afraid of nothing and no one.
Boss, they say, eyes cruelly soft. He says they were heading back to the Republic. Apparently £2,500 buys enough nose jars to convince Spanish Jackie to give him a room above the bar.
A damn fool, he says again. Imagine, thinking he can just give me his location and I'll, what, beg him to come back to me? Forgive him for abandoning us?
I'm going to burn down the whole town and Steed Bonnet inside it.
So we're going then? To find Steed and the rest of them?
The hope in Jim's eyes is too much for Blackbeard right now. Makes him feel like he's accidentally doing something kind. For them, and maybe for himself, which is six kinds of nonsense.
We're going, he says. Right the fuck now.
When he gives the orders, Izzy looks at him with the heavy disappointment that he is absolute garbage at hiding. And it makes the Kraken so angry for a moment he thinks his tattoos will come alive and join his hands in strangling Izzy's tattooed little neck until his last breath fades into nothing.
You want us to capture him at Spanish Jackie's?
Izzy says after a long moment, flat and disbelieving. He will face pirate justice, Blackbeard says darkly, for his many crimes.
Boss,
Izzy begins, and now his face is doing something else, and it's even worse. His crimes against piracy, which, as I stated just now, are many, such as...
You could send me to kill him,
Izzy suggests. And it's almost gentle, which is the absolute worst thing.
Pirate justice, Ed hisses, trying for menacing. Pirate crimes.
Izzy's sigh is, Ed feels, a little dramatic.
Pirate crimes such as...
Such as disloyalty. Such as abandoning his crew in their greatest moment of need. Such as theft of...
Theft is what pirates do, Captain, Izzy says.
Not from each other, first mate hands, he shouts. A normal and extremely intimidating Blackbeard shout that shows he is fully serious about crimes against piracy.
Often from each other, boss.
The weight in his voice, the finality, is an insult that Ed doesn't have an answer for at the moment.
If you go, you're just going to give him what he wants.
I will never give him what he wants. Blackbeard says darkly, finding the right level of threat that should put an end to this line of conversation right away. Toot sweet, he thinks, just like Jim said. Izzy pauses long enough that Ed thinks maybe that's it. Maybe he's proven to Izzy that there's nothing, that it's not going to be like...
Edward, I think you'll always give him what he wants.
Blackbeard's knife is in his hand before he can think. And he is throwing it with the exact same aim and speed and intent of the horrible thing Israel Hands has just had the audacity to say to him. It hits dead center, clean through the space where Izzy's head would have been if he stayed, and buries itself deep in the door that Izzy closed behind him as he left. He goes to the door, tugs at the knife's hilt, but it won't budge for anything. They've already set sail in the direction of the Republic of Pirates when Ed emerges from his cabin the next morning, nursing a rum headache and an escalating series of regrets. It seems that Izzy Hands is still a competent enough first mate that he will execute orders even when he thinks the man giving them is an idiot and a pushover. Or maybe he has plans of his own again, and they just happen to align with Blackbeard's order last night.
Be there tonight, probably, says Fang from the bridge. Favorable winds, eh?
Tonight feels too far away, and too close for comfort. He's on edge the whole day, and moves back and forth from scaling the ropes to the crow's nest, eyes hungry for some sign of land on the horizon, down to his quarters, where he applies the Kraken's grease paint to his short, thick beard, scrubs it off again, and reapplies it as if getting it exactly right will protect him from whatever story Steed has in mind to spin for him. It would maybe be exhausting, if only Blackbeard ever got tired. And it would build up his anxiety to a great knot in his stomach, if only Blackbeard could feel nervous. So when it finally comes, the cry of land ho from Frenchie up in the crow's nest fills him with nothing at all, except obviously his need for vengeance. Pirate justice.
You're done for, Steed Bonnet,
he mutters, and tries not to hear the muffled laugh of Jim by the port rails, or the disgusted huff coming so disrespectfully from Izzy at his back.
Today, Ed announces, for the crew's benefit and no other reason, we will have justice for the crime Steed Bonnet has committed against all of you, and against piracy and the Pirate's Code.
Pirate's Code is a thing,
Ivan says, not even bothering to pretend whisper to Fang, who is busy guiding the ship into port in the quickly fading dusk.
I didn't know it was a thing. Why didn't you tell me?
It's not, mate, says Fang. Or it wasn't,
But if Blackbeard says it is, it must be a thing we didn't know about.
The Pirate's Code, which is definitely a real thing, Blackbeard adds viciously, for their particular benefit, is sacred to us all and demands justice. We will have it today, and we can all rest easy knowing that we have carried out pirate justice for the code. The Pirate's Code.
There's a smattering of applause as he finishes talking, and he can swear he hears someone cheer. Someone's definitely cheering from somewhere, Ed is sure of it.
Izzy claps him on the back. Great speech, Captain, he says, all sincerity. Inspiring for the men. Pirates love justice, everyone knows that.
Are you doing that massive aggression thing? He asks as Izzy moves past him. But Izzy is already barking orders to the men about the sails, and he probably didn't hear Ed.
Upstairs, says Spanish Jackie, not bothering with greetings. She's smoking a cheroot as she examines some ledgers, feet propped up next to an improbably large jar in a golden sort of cage thing, six noses sunk inside pink water. Clearly been refilled recently, he thinks. Steed does take joy in thoughtful gift-giving. He didn't think he'd show up. He's been flitting around here for a goddamn week like some tropical fish thing. Jackie hates goddamn fish. You certainly took your sweet fucking time, Blackbeard.
I got here when I got here, he says with a shrug. Clear the place out, will you?
Fuck off. Jackie ain't losing customers. Spanish Jackie gotta keep her husbands in style. She takes the pull off her cheroot, blows a smoke ring in his face like she thinks he's gone soft.
Fuck that. Fuck all of this.
He pulls out his blunderbuss and fires a round of hail shot at the bar, where the bottles on the shelves above shatter in a satisfying rain of glass and liquor.
Everybody get the fuck out, he says into the silence.
The fuck was that for? Spanish Jackie yells over the ensuing commotion.
Blackbeard didn't take his sweet time, he tells her. Blackbeard never left. That was an error you made, thinking he did. Maybe you want to leave too, Jackie. I won't burn the place down. I'll even pay you back for the spilled liquor if you just give me some goddamn privacy to do whatever the fuck I need to do to pay Bonnet back for what he did to my men.
Your men, Jackie says. She squints at him like he's a joke she doesn't get. You're fucking with me, Blackbeard.
He leans in close. Do I look like I'm fucking around, Jackie?
She seems like she's genuinely considering the question, which is not exactly what he expected. But then she's getting up from her seat, stubbing her cheroot out into a shallow dish of sand affixed to the top of the nose jar. Steed got her a nose jar ashtray combo. No wonder she liked him now. Spanish Jackie points at him with her wooden hand. Don't wreck anything else, she says, snatching up her ledger. And don't set any fires you don't put out or Jackie will come for you.
Fine, he says, and moves to go upstairs.
Hey, she shouts, stopping in the doorway of the bar. This is serious, motherfucker. Jackie's not just talking about the rum shelf, you dumb fuck. Jackie don't care what happened, and she don't want to hear some sad sack bullshit from whatever the fuck it is you're calling yourself these days. Squid, cracker, tentacle boy. Nobody gives a shit about you and your names and your fucking face paint.
That's enough, Jackie,
he says, going for menacing and definitely achieving it. He's Blackbeard. He's the Kraken. He's all of it. He's more.
Fix it with him, says Jackie. Get your head out of your ass, old man.
Fuck you, he says. But she's already gone, and now it's like he's just talking to himself. There's one open door at the end of the hallway, so he figures that must be it. He's always been good with numbers, but it didn't take a genius to make this calculation.
You sent a letter, he calls down the hallway. It was received.
He sees shadows flicker in the candlelight. Hears the creak of someone shifting on furniture inside. A bed, maybe.
You thought Ed would want to talk to you, Bonnet?
He pulls out his sword, lets the tip drag a bit on the floor. The Kraken likes the sound, and it bolsters his resolve.
Ed's gone. I'm what's left. We'll see if I like what you've got to say.
The furniture, bed, shifts again, and he grips the hilt a little tighter. Steed isn't answering, and he should be. He was the one that fucking wanted this, not Blackbeard, not the goddamn Kraken. All of him was perfectly happy with the way things were before he found that letter.
But now he's here, standing in a hallway, and Steed's not answering. Fuck him. Fuck.
I'm here just like you wanted. You better be prepared for what's coming.
The door is just open. Fuck. Everything was always open with Steed. Open right up until it wasn't. He steps inside. There's a fire and a brazier in the corner of the room, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous because this is an island in the Caribbean in fucking August and it's hotter than the devil's massive cock, even with the breeze coming through the open window. This damn room is too warm for anyone. Steve doesn't know a fucking thing about a fucking thing. And he's just sitting there, right on the fucking bed, fine linen shirt open to mid-chest, sleeves rolled up, writing in a book like he didn't hear any of it. Except,
my hands are shaking, you nutter. I know you heard me.
They're not shaking, Steed says, not looking up. This is just how I write.
Fuck off, it is not how you write. I read your letter, I've seen how you write.
Steed's eyebrows rise disbelievingly. It is really sort of insulting. Blackbeard steps closer and straightens his posture, drawing himself up to his most menacing height. He's blocking the light from the brazier now, putting Steed fully in shadow. Steed looks up, finally. It's good you've learned, he says to Ed, voice horribly soft, affectionate.
You don't get to do that, Blackbeard snaps. You don't get to talk to me like that.
There's confusion on Steed's face, and he wants to tear that expression off and... Like what, Ed? He says.
You don't get to call me that. You don't get to have any of it. I'm Blackbeard. You don't get to just...
He waves his sword, because all of his words seem like they're slipping away, just like they did on the party ship. Except this time there's not laughter surrounding him, just the heat and the flicker of light and shadow and the terrifying, open expression on Steed's face.
You don't get to tell me stories that make no goddamn sense and expect Ed to just come back like it's nothing. Life doesn't work that way.
Steed tucks his quill away in a fiddly wooden box, because of course he does, and marks the page in his book with a black silk ribbon. He sets it on the nightstand, pats it gently, and then finally, one endless awful moment later, he looks up at Blackbeard. His eyes are stupid, definitely, and a muddy kind of hazel that isn't at all golden and warm in the firelight. And they're kind of wet like there's smoke in the air, which there probably is, he thinks. What with the brazier? Steed doesn't care about him enough to tell him a real story. Of course he wouldn't care enough about him to shed tears. Ed was a fucking idiot, and Blackbeard is glad to be rid of him.
Stories, Edward. What do you... Didn't you read my letter?
His wretched face always shows every goddamn thing he's thinking, except for when...
I read you lies, he hisses.
And now you'll finally experience...
What are you doing? Why are you doing that with your face?
Steed's eyes are squeezing shut now, like he's trying to shut out everything Blackbeard is saying, like he can just will him away after Steed was the one who brought him here in the first place.
Open your eyes, man. You have to own up to what you've done. Come on, you have to look. Look at pirate justice when it comes for you.
Steed is burying his head in his hands now, tears well and truly falling, shoulders shaking with the effort of it, and it's not what he wanted when he came here, is it? It's not how this was supposed to go. They were supposed to be yelling at each other. There was meant to be a fight. Steed didn't care enough about him to stay. He shouldn't care enough about him to do this.
Steed, he says, voice dropping low, calm like a snake about to strike, probably.
And definitely not trying to soothe this lying liar weeping into his fine linen shirt sleeves like he doesn't even care about messing them up.
Steed, you have to stop this. I know it's not real, man. Just...
Why? Steed says, head snapping up. Why do you think it's not real? I've never lied to you, Ed. I've only ever lied to myself, I swear it. I told you I was coming that day, and I meant it. And then badminton. I told you this in the letter, didn't you read it? I fucked up, I know, but I didn't lie to you. He's just working himself up more, hands twisting on the linens of the creaky old bed, and his cheeks are blotchy and streaked with snot. It's not... He looks awful, Blackbeard thinks, and pathetic, and he's lying. It's all deception, all of it. He's always been a master of the dramatic arts. Everyone knows that. Steed's words are coming in between deep, gasping breaths. I told myself, I told myself such awful lies, because Badminton said them with so much certainty, and I saw the look you had when your beard was gone, like you were... All the light was gone out of you, I thought. All the fight. And I knew I'd ruined your life. I told myself you'd be better off, he says on a wretched sob, staring down at his hands like they're covered in filth and he's forgotten how to clean them. Better off without me. You'd be you again, when you were away from me, because I ruin everything. I'm not a good person, Ed. And I've ruined this, too.
I'm not a good person. I've ruined your life. I ruin everything.
Something untwists deep inside Ed, and the release of it nearly knocks him over. He remembers the bathtub, his inadequate gasp for air, the moment he handed his confessions to Steed along with his heart, and how Steed had taken both like a precious treasure and not a grenade about to explode. I'm not a good person. That's why I don't have any friends. You have me. This shouldn't be enough. It's not the justice he'd promised anyone. Izzy or the crew or even the Kraken. Now retreated back to the dark and terrified parts of his mind in a sulk. But the fire had burned so hot in him that it had consumed all the air, taken up all the available space until there was nothing left to burn, and then, with nothing left to feed it, it died. The only thing that remains now is this, the two of them, together in this room, bruised and unsteady. He kneels on the floor in front of Steed, trying to get him to just stop, to look at him and really see. His knee screams in protest, but it barely registers when Steed is slumped on the bed, head in hands, shaking with the force of his tears. Hey, shh. That's not what really happened, Steed. Maybe there's tenderness in Ed's voice. Maybe his hand on the bed brushes up against Steed's thigh, trying to pull his focus down, and maybe it lingers. I think I know that, Steed says finally, still refusing to open his eyes and really see. Except now part of it is true. I ruined you, but not in the way I thought. I ruined this when I left, when I let Badminton get in my head and shove me away from you. I almost ruined what Mary had built too, until she beat some sense into me. It was in the letter, Ed, how she made me realize that I... You read it, right? That part? How she made me see that I loved you? Loved? He asks, a soft murmur into Steed's knee, willing him to open his eyes. Or... Love, Edward. I don't think I'll ever stop. And you can call me a liar if you need to. I deserve all of it, all your anger. Everything you want to take from me and more, probably. Then he clinches up, hands twisting together as if he's steeling himself against what's coming, and opens his eyes. Finally, Ed thinks. Finally they're staring into his, luminous as brandy shared by candlelight. They speak of warmth, of shared laughter in the quiet night, the memory of celebrations past and the hope of triumphs yet to come. Ed is almost delirious with it, waiting for whatever Steed might say next. I just want you to take the rest of me, too, if you can bear it. Fine things, he murmurs, remembering that moment when he first felt the ache of wanting hook itself so deep in his chest, when there wasn't room for anything else in his mind but this. He shifts off his bad knee, his brace creaking a little, and leans into Steed's space. He already laid himself bare, Ed thinks. He did it just the once, and it hurt him. But maybe he can handle a little more hurt, if he needs to, if it will bring him this. I think, Ed says carefully, I will take you after all. Honestly, I'm doing the world a favor. I don't think you're safe to inflict upon anyone, Steed. You're an agent of chaos, and you leave destruction in your wake in the most... He trails off, searching for the word, and the idea of it all makes him smile. The most interesting ways. And I wouldn't miss any of it for the world. I'll have an interesting bit of destruction, me. Steed is staring at him like he's grown another couple of heads. His mouth gapes a bit, just like the fish Spanish Jackie was talking about earlier. And for a moment no sound comes out in reply. Then he finds his voice. I've heard that said of you once or twice, he says slowly. His hand reaches out to Ed like he wants to touch his face. Maybe stroke his hair, but can't figure out how. Instead, he places both hands on his own knees, just far enough away from Ed to maintain some sort of weird rich English sense of whatever it is that those people worry about when they're meant to be having fun.
Yeah?
Ed asks, leaning forward to nuzzle into the hand that should have been laid on his cheek. He feels light somehow, mostly in his stomach. It's like he's been drinking too much of Steed's brandy again, body draped in cashmere, head full of terrible, beautiful ideas. What else have you heard? Steed's pulse quickens, and Ed can feel it against his cheek. Izzy was right, he thinks. He will never be able to deny Steed anything. Why on this godforsaken earth did he think he'd be able to deny Steed his forgiveness? I heard, Steed says, gulping air as if he's been holding his breath. I heard that you were wicked, that you could dream up a storm and it would do your bidding. I heard that you could control the devil himself with just a stare, and he'd fall in line rather than face your wrath. What's an agent of chaos to a man who can do all that, Ed? Steed leans forward and then hesitates like he doesn't know what to do, like he can't figure it out, or get up the courage to make another request now that he's found what he was looking for. Ed figures maybe he can have some pity and make the decision for him.
I can tell you, he says, but I need you down here first.
He tugs Steed forward, overbalancing him in one swift move and guiding him to the floor. They are perhaps too old for this, but he's not sure if he has it in him to get up right now, and he needs this more than he has ever needed anything in his whole entire life. You have me, Steed says, breathless. He looks like some fine golden-haired prince in a storybook. He is golden in the light, hair rumpled, shirt sleeves wrinkled and mostly translucent in the brazier's light. He is the best dream Ed has ever had. Tell me what you would have me do.
Kiss me, Ed says without hesitation. I mean it.
I think, Steed begins, then closes his eyes. Ed's heart jumps, but he just waits. He can wait as long as he needs to this time. Steed takes a deep breath. I think I must, Edward, he says, leaning the rest of the way. His lips are tentative, pressed softly against his like he doesn't quite know how this is meant to go, and it continues the list of things Ed should not be charmed by, but is.
I mean it too,
he whispers into Steed's mouth and kisses him back in earnest. Steed opens up under Ed's mouth, a surrender, a question. And there's nothing for Ed to do but respond in kind, to tangle his tongue with Steed's, to savor the hitch in his breath and the vibration of his low moan as the kiss deepens, turns filthy. Ed will have what he wants. They are too old to be doing this on the floor when there's a perfectly acceptable bed that only creaks a little right next to them. But on the other hand, Ed is terrified that if this stops even for a moment, all the tentacles laying quiet inside might start to creep back from where they've hidden themselves away. That he might go cold and angry and disbelieving, and he doesn't want to do that. Instead, he pulls Steed close, so the whole of their bodies are pressed together from shoulder to toes, and runs a hand down Steed's bare calves. He wears no stockings this time, so the only thing Ed feels is soft skin and a dusting of golden hair. This he follows slowly up past Steed's breeches and over Steed's thigh, tracing the long lines of his muscles under soft twill fabric that he was certain didn't used to be quite so sculpted. Steed's breath catches, and Ed is fucking drunk on these guileless, amazed little sounds Steed keeps making, as if every rising need is new and overwhelming, as if every touch is a discovery to be catalogued. He finds himself torn between cutting to the chase, laying a firm hand between Steed's splayed thighs and taking, and building up their need until it boils over, until all they are is sensation. Steed is making his preferences known, hips stuttering up, trying to thrust into nothing as Ed continues to hold him down. But then again, he doesn't exactly say what he's after, just makes little noises into Ed's mouth that he never wants to end. Fuck it, he's going to draw this out. He's been waiting too long for this not to savor every fucking bit.
I don't think you're ready for this yet,
Edward says, pulling away from Steed's mouth to lick the salt, tears, sweat, see, from the soft skin of his jaw, the hollow at the base of his throat. Ed's teeth scrape delicately along the shell of Steed's ear, and he begins to shake, as if he's never done any of this before, as if he's an untried boy instead of a father of two with hair going silver at his temples and skin that crinkles at the edges of his eyes like he doesn't know how not to smile.
I think you have needs you don't even know yet, and maybe you need me to show you.
He bites down on Steed's earlobe, sucking hard for one beautiful moment, and nothing has ever sounded like the sound Steed makes, pure once stripped of all thought.
I'll take care of you, Ed says, if you just trust me.
His mouth moves down to the delicate skin of his throat where Steed's pulse is flickering. He'll make his mark here, he thinks. That will do for now.
I trust you, Steed gasps,
like for once in his life talking is an impossible task. His hand moves further up Steed's thigh, just barely avoiding the heat he can feel at the place where they meet, where Steed's cock strains against his breeches like there's no room left for anything but his desire.
Then you can wait.
Ed moves his hand away, pulling the shirt tails out of his waistband, slipping around to palm the curve of his arse.
See, first I need to find every single spot on your body that makes you sound like that.
Pulling the clothes off of him is his first priority, but Ed doesn't really want to stop touching him long enough to slip his shirt over his head. It's a real puzzle, and it doesn't help that his head is fuzzy from the heat and the joy of it all. Need wins out, though. He finds he can't go another minute without feeling the whole of Steed pressed against the whole of him. Nothing left to separate them. It might just be worth sacrificing a piece of the moment for the full experience. And oh, the whine Steed makes when his shirt comes off, as his soft skin reddens with the scratch of Ed's beard and the caress of his sea-rough hands. He's so responsive, Ed thinks, like he's never had to worry about tempering the sounds of his pleasure for fear of being caught out. Or maybe, a wicked voice in his head reminds him, he's never had occasion to make those sounds before. Maybe it's just you. I'm gonna show you everything, Ed says, voice hoarse against Steed's collarbone, like he's been broken apart and put back together. He has to taste, has to touch, and he's greedy with it.
I don't want to leave anything out, love. I want you to never
leave me again.
Forget what your body can feel, if you just let it.
I'm gonna eat you up. Swallow every bit of you until the only thing that's left is these sounds you're making. Edward has only ever been good at patience when it comes with the looming threat of death, facing such a loss as would be irreparable. But as he speaks, he finds himself in that space now where his mind sees everything that is happening and everything that will happen next, where he is so focused on making his plan work that he can ignore every other fleeting, momentary need. When he works at Steed's tightening pink nipple with the flat of his tongue, bites at it gently, the taste feeds those needs just enough to satisfy in the moment. The pleading noises Steed is making, the despairing groan when Ed pulls away, and the shocked, oh, when Ed's teeth nip at the soft skin just under the spot where his heart is pounding out a frantic rhythm behind his ribs. All those sounds sate him just enough that he can deny himself immediate gratification. Steed writhes against him, trying to find relief by rubbing against the ridge of his hip bone. And Edward knows it cannot possibly be enough, not when it could be so much better. So Ed rolls him up onto his lap, arranges him just so, and begins the slow and fumbling process of working the buttons free at the falls of Steed's breeches. It's made more challenging by the way Steed moves on top of him, by the taste of his sweat beating on the muscles of his shoulder, the gorgeous, incoherent pleading he makes when Ed bites down on the meat of it, sucking until he knows he's made a mark that will last a week or more. At last, the breeches are loose enough that he can slide his hands in, palm the curves of Steed's arse, squeeze as he encourages him to find a rhythm to his movements.
Imagine, Ed says in a low, affectionate voice that he barely recognizes coming out of his mouth. Imagine when the rest of your clothes come off. Imagine yourself naked, testing me out, taking me for a ride. Imagine me tasting you here.
His thumbs slide around to press into the hollow of Steed's hips.
And here.
His fingers trace a great circle, up along the slope of his lower back and then down, just into the cleft of his arse. It's the lightest of touches, barely enough for Steed to feel it, but he does. And Ed feels him shake with the want of it where he's riding Ed's leather-clad thigh. His prick is hot and hard, seeking pressure. And when Ed looks down, he can see the beginnings of a wet mark darkening the sand-colored twill of Steed's breeches.
Up, he says,
and begins the process of shifting Steed off his lap and back onto the bed. The loss of pressure seems to jolt him out of the bubble of soporific pleasure he was in, and he blinks up at Ed with wide, confused eyes.
Woody, how should I?
Ben, Ed says, just let me. It's not a fluid motion, and it takes longer than he wishes it did, but he's up too, and Steed has done exactly what he was told, laying back on the bed and watching him, one hand pressing down on his prick under the dampening fabric like he's trying to stave off his release.
Want to see you,
he gasps out, lifting his hips up so Ed can finish stripping him down to nothing, just pale skin turning to gold where the sun has kissed it, where the hair on his body glimmers in the firelight.
Please, Ed, can you just...
Ed shrugs off his jacket, leaving it where it thuds to the floor, and says,
I guess fair is fair. But don't touch yourself yet. Just wait, okay? I promise I'll make it so good for you.
Steed's hand, which had begun a slow stroke along the length of his cock inside his breeches, moves away immediately, fingers tangling into the bedding beneath him.
Keep going,
he says, pleading. The black shirt is next, requiring no buttons, just a simple tug at the collar to slip it over his head, and then it too is left forgotten on the floor. He cannot be deft with the laces of his leathers, but the slow easing of the pressure on his prick as they come undone is a relief of the highest order, and he groans with it. Then he makes the mistake, or perhaps the best possible choice, of glancing over at Steed. A masterpiece, he thinks. This is perhaps the finest thing he will ever see, ever touch. Steed has managed to shove his breeches down to his knees, and his cock is flushed red with want and absolutely dripping. It's massive, thick and weighty like no one else he's ever had, and the curved length of it reaches nearly to his belly button. Ed thinks for a wild moment of suffocating himself on that cock, taking it so deep that air becomes a distant memory, until the only thing he knows is the stretch of his mouth around it, the perfect weight of it down his throat. He feels himself sway a little as if he's already short of breath, but he's sure Steed doesn't notice, just as he is sure that Steed has absolutely no idea how exceptional he is, how beautiful, what a treasure he has hidden away from anyone who can treat such beauty with the reverence it deserves. But Ed can't lose himself too deeply dreaming of future plans, because Steed's hips are coming up off the bed in frantic and unsatisfying little thrusts that meet only air. His lips are bitten red from trying to keep the sounds of pleasure quiet, and Edward needs all of it, right the fuck now, under him and against him and around him. Steed has laid himself bare for Ed's consumption, and when presented with such a banquet, he cannot help but be greedy. He has unlaced his leathers most of the way, freed his prick from its constraints, and that will have to be enough for Steed right now, because if he doesn't do something immediately, he thinks he might actually expire from the need of it. I'll keep my promises to you, he says, and moves onto the bed, taking Steed's cock in hand and stroking down as much as he's able, starting from the dripping mess at the head down to the base. A noise emerges from Steed like he's just taken a punch, and Ed watches in fascination as his prick sort of flexes in Ed's hand, tries to focus on the now rather than picture the way that might feel deep inside him. There's not enough time to do everything he wants to do, Ed thinks, except that isn't actually true, is it? Because he's going to keep this man forever. He'll make the time he needs. So he ducks down, takes the slick crown of Steed's prick into his mouth. Even this starting point is overwhelming his senses in all the best ways, from the weight of it on his tongue, the salt brine taste of his need, the shift and pulse of muscle and blood and spend beneath the velvet smooth skin. Fine things, Edward thinks, breathing deep through his nose before he starts to sink down, wanting to devour this man and everything he's offered up until there's nothing of Steed he hasn't tasted. He doesn't make it as far as he'd like on the first go. He tries to work the route as best he can given his hand just barely touches when he wraps around the thickest part of the shaft, and gently cups Steed's balls before stroking the delicate skin behind. All the while he pushes himself to take more and more into his throat with each thrust, deeper and deeper until he's gagging a bit with each movement. More than anything, Ed wants to be impressive for Steed, to put all of his talents to work, but it's all too much for him to put on any kind of show. Steed doesn't seem to notice any lack of artistry, or really anything but the way Ed is working him. The keening, pleading sounds he's making are continuous now, and his hands have twisted mindlessly into Ed's hair. It spurs him on, and he goes faster, twisting his tongue along the shaft with each downward push, setting a pace with the hand at the root of him that grows more frantic each time he slides back up. The sounds could be his name, he thinks. A plea, or a prayer, or... Ed, I... He feels the clench of muscle and the pulse of the climax in one triumphant moment before Steed's cum is filling his mouth and spilling out from the sides despite his own best intentions. It's likely Ed could have pulled off if he wanted to, except he doesn't, because he needs all of it, everything Steed has, all the tastes and textures and ways he wants Ed. He welcomes it, though this terrifying depth of feeling is nothing he ever wanted before. Up until this hurricane of a man wrecked his monotonous existence and upended all the things he knew of himself. His joy at pulling such pleasure out of Steed warms him just as much as the hot spurts of spend, and he revels the thick slide of it going down his throat. He chases the feeling, continuing to tongue at the head until Steed is shoving ineffectually at his shoulders, until his cock is soft and twitching and oversensitive in Ed's greedy mouth. Only then does Ed pull away, hitching up to straddle Steed's thighs, shoving his leathers down a bit more so he can fully get his hand around his own leaking cock. It is already impossibly hard, and the sight of the unholy mess he's made of Steed, who is staring up at him sticky and wide-eyed and breathless, pushes him further. Gonna get you even filthier, he grits out, one hand speeding up as the other holds on to Steed's hip like it's the only thing keeping him falling off the edge of the earth. Gonna make you feel all the ways I want you. Please do it, Steed urges. I see. And it's enough. Ed flies apart, shaking above Steed as he paints the soft skin of Steed's belly with streaks of his release, dragging one hand through the mess and marking him as it just keeps going. Everything is too much. Too warm, too soft, too good, and he has nothing left in him. The arm he was propping himself up with drops down to the bed, and the last pulse of his cum is caught up between them when he's collapsed into Steed's arms, unable to do anything else but feel. A million moments later, or maybe just a few long breaths, he feels Steed's fingers trailing along his cheek, stroking gently like he's made of silk and in grave danger of being rumpled. Ed presses a kiss onto his chest, just beneath the love bite on his shoulder that is already blooming purple, and huffs a sigh of contentment as Steed's other hand begins to ruffle through his hair. He feels like the cat his gran kept around the house to keep the vermin at bay, and he's struck suddenly by a memory of the look of feline pride it wore whenever it would drop its kills at her feet. It would purr loud as anything afterward, when she'd scratch at the soft gray fur behind his little ears and coo sweet bits of praise the cat had no way of understanding. He would be a cat, he decides as his eyes drift closed, if it meant sprawling out on Steed's chest like this, being cosseted and cherished. He would bring Steed anything if he would just keep doing this. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, Steed whispers finally as the silence stretches on too long for comfort. I never knew I could feel like that. I never knew I could bring anyone that much. Steed seems to have lost his words, so Ed suggests, joy? Pleasure? Is there a word you fancy folks have that's kind of both, but also more? I think we shall have to invent one if there's not, Steed says. I'll consult the books when we get back to the ship. Ah, says Ed, closing his eyes on a wince. Well, see, about that. Edward? What exactly did you do? Steed asks in a strangled tone that Ed can't really parse. I couldn't stand it. Any of it. Any piece of it. And I'm sorry. I know you loved. And oh shit. He's babbling now more than he even did at the height of his pleasure. What does that even say about him? He tries. Well, anyway, it's not that important because what's really important... It's not that important, Edward. Steed says, voice cracking. And wow, that was absolutely the wrong thing to say. Fuck. Ed forges ahead anyway, trying to dig himself out. Because what's most important is that I'll fix it, I swear.
We'll take a few merchant ships. They've always got excellent pickings when it comes to books. You'll have a library better than it was before the Kraken decided. Well, you know.
Steed is silent again for a long moment, but the hand in his hair is back to scratching deliciously at the spot at the base of his skull, and the finger tracing along his cheek moves once again, this time dancing over the bow of his upper lip, maddening and gentle at once.
Merchant ships, he says at last. Like the one we took together before that awful party?
Exactly those, and as often as we need to, says Ed. He rolls to his side, looks down at Steed.
You really want to come back, then?
I've wanted to come back since about 30 seconds after I left, dearest, he replies with a beatific smile, looking for all the world like one of those angels in the paintings on the ceilings of that estate that Ed's mum snuck him in to see when she was sure it wouldn't get them in trouble. He seemed haloed with light and joy and certainty. It steals Ed's breath, and he is leaning in to capture that satisfied smile in a kiss. When they come up for air, Steed asks, what on earth was that for?
For you, of course, Ed says. Now, how shall we tell the crew? Because I may have promised them, pirate justice.
Ooh, is that a thing? Steed replies, way more enthusiastically than is necessary given the absolute bald-faced lie that Ed has told the crew of the Revenge.
I may have made it up, Ed admits. I didn't really know what I was going to do, and I didn't want them holding me to any, promises.
It's not good to promise things to the children that you can't deliver, says Steed, as if calling their crew of mostly unwashed treasure-mad pirates children was the most normal thing in the world.
Fuck, he doesn't know. Maybe it is.
And he's lost all ability to judge what passes for normal these days. With a wise expression, he adds, they'll develop trust issues.
The pirate Steed, Ed says sensibly. I'm fairly certain all those features are already well installed.
Steed considers this. You may be right, he says after a moment's thought. But we may as well be honest at this point. We've made up. We want to sail together for as long as we can, anyway.
For as long as you'll stay, Ed says.
Steed begins, but his face suggests he's been sucker-punched, and then it seems to crumple a bit, like the weight of the world has come rushing back in. Ed gathers him up close, kisses him again until he feels Steed untense, settle back into his arms.
None of that, he murmurs. What's done is done. There's always a way forward, and we found it. We'll keep sailing this route as far as it'll take us, and then together we'll find another.
Oh, Steed says, a little quaver still remaining in his voice, but smiling that soft smile once again. That's good. That's what I'd like, please.
So we'll just tell them that then, Ed says. We're captaining the Revenge together, rebuilding all of it, whatever was broken.
Steed's smile doesn't waver. But Ed is well aware that he's also not the fool that some people think he is, especially when it comes to emotion stuff. Gently, he asks, and they'll just be okay with it, do you think?
Eh, says Ed. I'm sure they'll be fine, more or less.
It so happens that Ed was absolutely right, and that some of the crew are extremely fine with things. Fang embraces Wee John with a sob, great arms wrapping around each other like fighting bears at a circus, and Oluwande seems to disappear within moments of stepping back on deck, pulled into the ship's hold by a shadow in a wide-brimmed hat. He emerges grinning from ear to ear some time later with a slightly less scowly Jim, their hands twisted together with his as if they were trying to lock him beside them through sheer force of will. Black Pete steps back on deck like he owns the place, and Ed watches his face fall as he glances around the assembled crew with a stab of guilt through the pit of his stomach that feels a lot like being run through. But then a smile begins to bloom on Pete's face, unfurling like a fern at the first warm summer rains, because somehow a not-at-all-dead Lucius has emerged from somewhere behind Frenchie, who doesn't look surprised at all. Instead, they both seem to be on the verge of tears as the rest of Steed's crew surrounds the two of them in what Ed thinks might be one of those group hugs that Steed has so often referred to. Unfortunately, Ed was also right about the less aspect of his prediction. Izzy has been swearing under his breath, presumably since he caught sight of them in the spyglass, rowing the dinghy back out to the ship,
and does not stop through Ed's entire explanation speech. It isn't even that long of an explanation, because Ed doesn't really know what to say. But Izzy's low and unceasing stream of profanity isn't exactly helping his ability to gather his thoughts. When the crew finally returns to their duties, or, more likely, off to some sort of reunion nonsense that they are likely better off not knowing about, Izzy remains, watching them both as he continues to mutter to himself. "Mr. Hands," Steed begins, but Ed shakes his head, and Steed falls silent. "I'm listening," Izzy says. He refrains from spitting in contempt at Steed's feet, but it is very much implied through his tone. "I should be grateful that you don't want to let your little pink pet speak for you, I suppose. But can you keep being Blackbeard, do you think, with him here to wrap you in pretty silks and feed you sweets?" "Izzy," Ed snaps, stepping forward with violence in his eyes. But there is a flash of satisfaction on Izzy's face, just for a moment, and Ed remembers what he's promised himself. He tries again, voice even. "Just, would you listen, Iz? You were right earlier, what you said. I was angry at you for saying it, but you were right. You told me exactly what was going to happen if I went to him, and I didn't listen." He feels Steed give his hand a squeeze, but keeps his eyes locked with Izzy's. "You're not apologizing, are you, Edward?" asks Izzy disbelievingly. It is not even close to what he wants, which almost tempts Ed into offering one. He refrains, though. "No, I'm not. I'm thanking you. You knew what was going to happen when I went to see him, and then you helped me do it anyway. I can't be sorry about any of it, standing here now. But I've disappointed you, and hurt you, and stood in your way more times than I can count. And you've tried to save me from myself, over and over, as best you knew how." "As best I knew how," Izzy repeats flatly. His hand moves to the pommel of his sword, traces over the lines of the metalwork in that way Ed has seen him do many times, trying to calm himself down enough to think clearly. "I mean, I gotta be honest, your methods are shit, Iz," Ed says. "They wrecked me. Almost killed us all. You got what you wanted for a while, so you tell me. Do you really think what you got was worth everything else?" Izzy takes a step back, and Ed can see him considering despite himself. "If you can stop all this and act like a first mate who doesn't hate his captain, well, I'll try to be a captain you don't hate again. But Steed stays." He reaches for Steed's hand, gives it a squeeze for his own reassurance as much as Steed's. "He's the one who's stopping me from being a captain who hates himself." Even then, Izzy doesn't try to respond, but his eyes are focused on the deck in front of him, and Ed knows him. He sees the thoughts racing around Izzy's head like cats doing zoomies. He's clearly considering everything, trying to work out what to do. "Please think about it," Steed says softly. "Blackbeard wants you to stay, so do I." "Fuck off, Bonnet," Izzy says, but it's more reflexive than anything. There's no fight in it, and it makes Ed smile as he pulls Steed away. "We heard you were dead," says Frenchie, tearing into an orange and handing Steed a section. "Something about a lion and a carriage and, what was it, a harpsichord?" "A grand piano," says Steed, biting into the orange. He'd shrugged off any concerns Ed expressed about injuries, and made his way into the galley like he hadn't been gone for weeks and weeks, like he still owned the place. With anyone else, it would have bothered Ed's distraction. But Steed is sitting at the table there like he belongs, tucking into the orange and smiling up at Ed like it's the best one he's ever had, like this is all he can imagine wanting. Ed grins down at him helplessly. "It sounds very dramatic." "It was," Steed says, gesturing with the orange, a gleam in his eye. "A fuckery." "Fuckery," says Frenchie reverently. The story Steed tells is ridiculous, and almost word for word the story in the letter he left on the island. Frenchie is laughing as Steed describes the part with the jaguar, the move with the chicken leg, the pig's blood, the terrified screams of the townsfolk outside, and now that he's watching the whole thing retold by Steed, it bowls him over. Of course it's true. What had he been thinking? It couldn't possibly be anything but true. Nobody would make up something this mad for something so easy as a story. It's too mad. More than that, this fuckery would make no sense whatsoever coming from anyone else but the man he loves.
It's like one of those complex machines where you look at each of the parts independently and you think, no way that's going to do a damn thing. But then everything starts moving and you realize it was always going to do what it set out to do. Things don't work, do they? Right up until they actually do. None of this should have happened in the first place. No little part of the experience of falling in love with Steed, and back out, and back in again, or maybe he was never out in the first place, should have played out how it did, because every part of it was fucking impossible. Just like everything else in his life, though, it was impossible right up until it wasn't, which leaves them here, together, in this moment with Steed, the juices of the orange glistening on his mouth, sitting next to Frenchie.
Right, he says, standing up. Steed, we have to sort out your quarters, and Frenchie, I'm sure you've got important ship stuff to do off somewhere in the ship.
Frenchie's eyebrows shoot up like they're going to escape off the top of his head, but he just says, yeah, Captain, ship stuff, and stuffs another orange section into his mouth.
Steed, let's go figure out the next thing, he says, and pulls Steed up.
Right, but I haven't even gotten to the part with the piano, and... He looks up at Ed, and the smile that rises on his face when he realizes what Ed is trying to do is one of those little pleased, secret smiles that make Ed want to go wrestle a whale or blow a fucking great hole in the broadside of an English frigate.
Shall we, Captain Bonnet?
He asks, proffering his arm like the gentleman he isn't.
Indeed we shall, Captain Teach, says Steed breathlessly, and takes it. The end.
Notes. My heart's the field I sow for thee to water and reap. My heart's the house I ope for thee to air and dust and sweep. My heart's the rug I spread for thee to dance or pray or sleep. My heart's the pearls I thread for thee to wear or break or keep. My heart's a sack of magic things, magic carpets, caps, and rings. To bring thee treasures from afar and from the deep. Written by Amin Rihani, 1921.